You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. As always, I am your host, Daniel Lee of Photos by DLEE. Today, the episode is titled A Choice is Made, which is related to last fortnight's episode about which lens I was going to get. Going to do this week's format a bit different. It's just going to be personal updates, which includes, you know, about which lens I chose to get, along with some news topics, which is quite a few news topics, because in the last fortnight, a ton of gear was actually released and a lot of information came out. So I thought I'd make this week's one a little bit more about the news. Hopefully everyone still enjoys that. But yeah, I'll try and make it a little bit more interesting, add in my thoughts, that kind of stuff as well. Now, so first, as always, we're going to get into personal updates, which is going to include which lens I chose. So first off, daylight savings has started here. So goodbye to blue hour shooting for me. Sadly, you know, 6:45 to 7 is sunset, you know, so we're about 7:15, 7:30 is blue hour. Honestly, it's not too late. It's still fairly reasonable, but just too late for me. I'm getting, you know, to bed earlier and earlier. I'm more and more tired every day. So going out at night just isn't for me. I'm too old. I say that as I'm, you know, mid-30s, but still, I'm at grandma levels of tiredness when it comes to this kind of stuff. In all fairness, I do wake up early every day, do 90 minutes of exercise every day, try to keep myself as fit as possible, but it's still tiring, you know? And when it comes to which, you know, lens I've got, that would be the Sigma 50mm f2 DGDN. So that went on sale for 20% off, so it came to a really good price. Still kind of pricey for a 50mm f2, I guess, but you know, I've had it for a few days now, haven't got to use it too much because of the weather and just busy with work. And admittedly, Assassin's Creed Mirage came out, so I've been busy playing that as well. But otherwise, it's a really, really great lens. So as you would have mentioned, or if you listened to the previous episode, the main reason I wanted to sort of decide between these two lenses is I wanted something small and light to carry around eventually, you know, especially when I get my A7 C2. I wanted to keep everything as small and as compact as possible. Now this one definitely fits the bill. Size, especially without the lens hood, is tiny and it's very, very light. So when I carry it around, it doesn't really put a strain on my back or my shoulders or anything. It's sort of like just like carrying around the Sony FE16-35 PZ lens, because that one's about the same weight, maybe 5-6 grams difference, that's it. So technically, I could carry those two lenses around with the A7 Mark IV or the A7C, and it'll be similar to just carrying around the 35GM, or maybe a bit higher than that, but similar to carrying around the 85 lens, because that one's quite heavy, around 600 something grams. Sharpness wise, that was one thing that was a little bit concerned, because I've seen mixed reviews. Some say it wasn't that great. Some say, most say it was really great at certain distances. When it came to shooting close to minimum focusing distance, which is what I shoot a lot, that one didn't seem as good. But in saying that, when I was doing my testing, from what I could see on real world subjects, the sharpness is really good. I haven't got a chance to post the images yet because I wanted to take a photo of the lens itself as well to be able to show off. But because, you know, I've been busy playing games, I haven't been able to do that. I haven't had the sort of energy or the enthusiasm, I guess, to do that. But hopefully that'll change soon. Won't make any promises, but by the time I post it, who knows, maybe I'll have enough photos for review. So we'll see how we go. I'm trying to do shorter reviews, more, keep them even more casual, make it not so typical kind of review. So, you know, less images is better, and making them more casual is even better as well. Now the rendering, the bokeh, all that kind of stuff on this lens, really, really great. It actually looks so smooth, so soft. The transition from in focus to out of focus is really good as well. It actually makes me wonder if the T-stop is actually faster than F2. So if you don't know what F-stop and T-stop is, so you know, like this lens is an F2 lens. So the F-stop is F2. So I believe what it meant to be is that based on all the schematics of the lens, that kind of stuff, the specifications, it's calculated to be an F2, but that isn't always the case. Sometimes an F2 lens will actually be more like an f2.5 or an f2.2 or even an f1.8 because of what it's called, the T-stop. The T-stop is the actual measurement of how much light is going through the lens and hitting the sensor. So you could have that's why, you know, sometimes, say for example, you're shooting, you have two A7 Mark IVs and you're shooting with two 50mm lens, say the 51.4 ART and the 51.4 GM. Now your correct exposure on the ART, it may be ISO 100, 1/100th of a second and f8, whereas on the other lens, it may be, you know, the same ISO 100, 1/100th of a second, but at f8, it's slightly bit, say, underexposed, so you need to open it up tiny bit more to, say, like f7.1. That means that the t-stop isn't, you know, really delivering whatever that f1.4 maximum aperture. It's actually, you know, slightly bit different. So, yeah, went down that, but otherwise, I wouldn't be surprised if the f-stop was maybe, the t-stop, sorry, was like f1.8 because of how nice this bokeh is. My only criticism is, and it's not a major one, not like I want to sell the lens straight away because of it, but I would be a bit happier if the minimum focusing distance was a bit shorter. I honestly can't remember off the top of my head. I think it's around 30, 40 centimeters, which isn't too bad, but it's still a bit longer than what I would want it to be. For me, the shorter the minimum focusing distance, the better. When I take all my test shots of these new lenses as well, I tend to only shoot wide open. Some people might think, oh, why can't you stop down? But to me, if a lens is sharp wide open, then it's going to be even, at the worst, it's going to be the same or even better stop down. So that's why I never see the point in really stopping down when I'm getting to know a lens and testing a lens, because I already know it's great if it's tack sharp wide open, perfectly happy with it. I know stop down later on, I'm not going to be disappointed in it. And when I say stop down, I mean like f8. I try not to go past f11 due to diffraction. Usually f8 is my sweet spot at the most. Now, I'm not sure when I'm going to get the A7C Mark II. I'm waiting for prices to drop still. There was a sale the other day that actually dropped it under free grand, like just under free grand, like 2,999 AUD. So technically that does qualify for what price I wanted to pay, but a bit broke at the moment, trying to, you know, prioritize certain things with my funds, trying to save that kind of stuff. So I'm not in a rush to get the A7 C Mark II. If I can wait till even next year before my birthday kind of thing in April, then I can get it even cheaper. So, you know, no real fuss at the moment. But when I do get it, I'm sure I'm going to use it a lot, because I found out online on Fred Miranda forums that it actually has a bulb timer. So that I am very, very excited for. Otherwise, not too much shooting, just, you know, testing out the lens. I don't plan to go out too much this weekend because, number one, Assassin's Creed, and also I need to go look at some stuff for like a personal project I'm doing on a Saturday, and then a Sunday I'm hoping to go, or not go anywhere, technically just go out for breakfast and then come back and watch WWE Fastlane, which is on. Not very exciting pay-per-view, but a premium live event, but I will watch it anyway. Now, on to the news. So I didn't list this down here, but I probably will put it in the show notes, because, you know, I make notes for what I'm going to say on the show. I completely forgot to add this in. Now, with how everyone uses photography these days, it's mostly social media. Now, you may be wondering what this has to do with news. So, because most people use social media or Reddit and Facebook, that kind of stuff, to post photos, all the websites like forums are more struggling to survive. So, we've seen DP Review nearly shut down, but there's other forums that were quite popular. So, there's Fred Miranda forums. That one is quite popular still. I feel like that has a lot of traffic, even though it is a forum. And the other one that used to be a lot bigger than it is now is called Photography on the Net, or POTN, what I refer to it as. When I first started photography, that was one of the sites I visited nonstop. Would always post anything I upload to Flickr, I would post over to there and would always post on there. So I've been using it for like 12 years now. Admittedly, like, over the years, the traffic has gone down and down. You know, say a new body got announced, say like when the 5D Mark III got announced, you would have like 20, 30 pages of discussions within a few minutes. Within 5 minutes, people would be posting about it, arguing, and that as time went on, that would slow down, slow down. Then when you get like, say, R6 Mark II, there wouldn't even be a page created for it. Maybe like a week later, someone will make a page for it. So the amount of traffic undoubtedly decreased. There was no denying that. And then there was a stage years ago where, for example, POTN used to be purely for Canon shooters, but eventually they made the decision to open it up to all brands, which I don't know why. It made a lot of people angry, so that people stopped using. There was a portion of people that stopped using it. To me, you know, the more the merrier. I don't really care. It's not like you're sharing the one thread. Nikon had their thread, Canon had their thread, we had our thread, you know, Sony or whatever had their thread, Fuji, for example. And it was even better as well, because people who say shot Canon but really liked the forum and wanted to keep using it but then swapped to Sony could still use it because you had Sony as well. But pretty much Pekka, the guy who runs and owns the website, had announced that due to, you know, his health, his age, the severe costs of running the website, and, you know, the stress of being able to code it, which is not easy. I know he's decided to shut the website down by the end of the year. There will be no archive, no save version, that kind of stuff. It's sad to see, but you know, you could see it coming. So now, I thought it was worth mentioning on here as news because not everyone uses forum or know of forums or even cares about forums anymore. But I know for me personally, that forum was huge. You know, I've used it so many years. Every time I write a review, I've posted that review on there and linked back to my website. I've made friends, you know, there's multiple people I've met. Renata, this woman from the US, when she came to Sydney, I met up with her. Another guy, Gary, he's in New Zealand in Auckland. I nearly forgot the name of the place because I just recently went to Queenstown. He's in Auckland. I met up with him as well when I went to Auckland. You know, I think there was another person as well. I've made a lot of friends over the years on there, chatted to them. So it's pretty sad to see it ending in a way, but it's not like it's coming out of nowhere where it's getting, you know, tens of thousands or 100,000 users a day and flooded with posts. I do still like the forum strategy, or not strategy, but the forum better, because I find with stuff like Reddit, Reddit's good and it's fun, but at the same time, it's a bit annoying as well. A lot of communities aren't properly managed, so you'll find someone will post about a new lens and someone else will post about that new lens later. And it's just people downvoting other people's posts just to put their post up higher. Whereas at least with a forum, you know, you had all Sony A7 IV photos posted in here. So you just post it. If, you know, people will post after you and that sort of stuff, but it's a lot easier to see a lot more content compared to on Reddit, in my opinion anyway. So I do still appreciate forums. Fred Miranda is probably the one that I'm going to use now, but it's not quite the same. You know, you can't really replace POTN like that. Either way, rest in peace to POTN soon. Thank you very much on my photography journey, helping me, making, you know, introducing me to people, making friends, but I guess it's time to move on. And speaking of moving on, let's get into the actual news. So first up, the Sigma 7200 f2.8 DGDN OS Sports development announcement. So Sigma has announced it's developing a 7200 f2.8 DGDN OS for Sony, Sigma, Panasonic, and Leica full-frame mirrorless cameras. Now keep in mind, that is a DGDN lens, so that means DG is for full-frame cameras. DN, obviously mirrorless, and OS is their version of image stabilization, so this would be great. So part of the, it's part sport series of lenses, so you remember they have their art, contemporary, and sport. It's designed to work alongside the 14-24 f2.8 and 24-70 f2.8 from the art series. It's constructed from 20 elements in 15 groups. It has a 77mm filter thread. It weighs 1.34 kilos, so 1,345 grams or 47.4 oz, and weighs 10 grams less in the E-mount version. It has an aperture range from 2.8 to f22, and there's no pricing yet because it is just a development announcement. To me, this is a great thing, especially for people who shoot these mounts, because not only do you have more options, so you're going to have the Sony GM lens Mark II, which I believe it has OS, this Sigma 7200 f2.8 DGDN OS, and you also have the 7180 G2 from Tamron, which also has OIS or OS, whatever you want to call it. So you have a lot of options. And you know, if you're a Panasonic shooter, although I believe from what I've read there, user base isn't very big, but you have such a wealth of lenses to choose from thanks to Sigma and all their art series and, you know, this sports and all that. Obviously, I've sort of moved away from that zoom 7200, 7180 area. So this isn't the type of lens I will buy, but they definitely have their place. They definitely have their use. They definitely have their value. Once we know pricing, that will sort of be a bit different. We'll be able to see how it compares to the Tamron and how it compares in general, like image quality, autofocus, all that kind of stuff. Because the Tamron usually is very, very good. I own that lens. It was amazing in image quality. Casey, I've mentioned it before, but if you don't know, Sony partly owns some of Tamron. They own like 12% of Tamron. So I believe they probably share that AF algorithm, because any money made from, you know, Tamron, Sony are getting a piece of that pie. So we just have to wait and see. Once they do have official pricing and all that kind of stuff, I'll be sure to update everyone on what that is. Next up, we have the Nikon Z 135mm f1.8s planar lens, which has been announced. So Nikon has announced the planar lens, which is a mid-telephoto portrait prime for Nikon Z series cameras. So planar, I believe how it's pronounced, derives its name from the Latin planum, which is loosely defined as vase or space that is full. Nikon says the planar was built with goals for sharpness, edge-to-edge brightness, round bokeh throughout with minimal cat eyes and superior light gathering quality. It's constructed of 16 elements in 14 groups, has 11 bladed aperture, STM focus motor, two function buttons, like two custom function buttons you can set to a whole worth of stuff, 82mm filter thread, a minimum focusing distance of 82cm or 2.69 feet, and superior dust and drip resistance, and it weighs 995 grams. And it's going to be arriving in October 2023, so this month, for a suggested retail price of $2,500. Now, I've watched a few reviews, all seem to be positive. To me, it comes down to image quality compared to the competitors. So obviously, if you're in a Nikon system, you don't want to swap. This is going to be the lens to choose. And from what I remember reading, their FX lens, their FX135 wasn't great. So this should be a good step up. But pricing, I believe, I can't say exactly. I believe the 135 GM and the RF135L, which even has IS, is around $2,199 US. Now, this one is more expensive. From what I remember, it's quite a bit more than the Canon RF lens here in Australia. It's like $400-$500 more at least, which is already overpriced. And then the Sony GM lens is about 2,200 AUD on sale, which it is majority of the time. So to me, the main thing that would hurt this lens is the pricing. If you're a Nikon shooter, you know, the weight isn't too much heavier than the other lenses. It's not like it's going to be sort of a make or break thing that'll stop you from wanting to shoot. But I would say that the weight is heavier. So if you're looking at everything, it's heavier than the competition. It costs more. So it just really comes down to what the IQ is like. If it destroys those two in the IQ, then it justifies the heavier weight and heavier price. But otherwise, it's, you know, really going to be up to you what system you're shooting. If you want to switch just for this one lens, you're a portrait shooter, you're living, this will pay for itself, then maybe who cares? It'll be interesting if Nikon do open up to third parties, because you have the Viltrox 135 f1.8, which is meant to be a great lens. And I believe Samyang are looking at releasing a 135 f1.8 as well. Opposite way around, Samyang are the ones that have the 135 1.8 on FE mount, but they are looking at also doing a Viltrox 135 1.8 from what I've seen in rumors. So if they do open up more fully to third parties, going to be even more options. Whereas Canon, it's the RF 135 or old mounts. That's it. No other options. Next up is some APS-C news. So Sigma has announced the 10 to 18mm f2.8 DCDN Contemporary, the world's smallest and lightest f2.8 zoom lens for APS-C mirrorless cameras. Now keep in mind, like I said before, DGDN, full frame, DCDN, APS-C mirrorless. Now the lens is also Sigma's first to release simultaneously for L-mount, Sony E-mount, and Fujifilm X-mount. So Fuji shooters, you don't need to wait extra long to get this lens. It'll be available at the same time as everyone else, which is honestly so good to hear. This lens will only weigh about 9.2 ounces, which is 260 grams. The lens's dust and splash resistance with sealing at the mount covers a 15 to 36 millimeter focal length in 35 millimeter full frame equivalent terms. It's constructed from 13 elements organized across 10 groups. It's got a push-on pedal type lens hood, 11.6 centimeter minimum focusing distance, and the Sigma 10 to 18mm f2.8 DCDN Contemporary lens will be available through authorized Sigma retailers for $599 starting October 26, which I say is a very fair price. Although I did sell all my Fuji gear, if I was building an APS-C kit, this would be a very, very compelling option, especially with here in Australia, we can get Sigma lenses very cheap direct from their manufacturer, CR Kennedy, when they do their eBay sales. The other options you have, say, as a Fuji shooter or Sony shooter, you got the Tamron, I believe it's 11 to 20, which is similar. That I believe was previously quite light as well, but this is meant to be even lighter. 260 grams is nothing. So if you travel this plus a 33 millimeter plus something on the tele lens, like, or maybe 56, that kind of stuff, you got a pretty good kit just for a very small and lightweight. Obviously, I don't have any APS-C body, so I wouldn't be getting this, but if I did, this is a lens I would definitely be interested in. And the next two are a bit, or next three technically, a bit shorter one. So next up, Nikon are to stop releasing lens roadmaps. So Nikon have previously announced upcoming lenses via their roadmap, which has been quite well praised by photographers. You've seen their charts, you know, this is what we're releasing quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, quarter four of 2021, 22, blah, blah, blah. During an Adorama Q&A, the senior marketing manager for Nikon USA explained that Nikon will no longer release lens roadmaps for its future lens releases. That person, that QA, that manager mentions the idea of surprising users as part of their motivation for the new direction for Nikon. The article does mention, you know, how Canon has previously said they won't announce a lens roadmap as they want to surprise their customers when they come out with these lenses. In my opinion, it can be viewed both ways. So by having a lens roadmap, you can help your photographers stop your photographers from switching to a system as they know the lens they want is coming. So say, for example, you're a RF shooter or a Z shooter, Nikon Z shooter. If you really want a 35mm f1.4 and the roadmap says there's one coming Q2 of 2024, you may be inclined to just stick it out in that mount with that, you know, wait for that lens to come out because you know it's coming. Whereas if you don't know, this is the downside of it, you may just leave. But at the same time, it works the same way. If you know I want a 35mm f1.4, but it's not on the roadmap for 2024, 2025, there's no chance of me getting it. Obviously, you could still get surprises like they have done, and that's noted in the article, but there's a good chance you will not see that lens during that time. So that means you're like, okay, if I'm not getting this lens, what's the point in which I really need for my work, my photography, my hobby, whatever? Then you may be like, okay, what's nothing stopping me? I'm just going to swap systems, which maybe in their experience, they found it was more like that compared to how it is now. I think lens roadmaps, I can sort of see why they wouldn't want to announce it, which I don't have an issue with. I personally like development announcements. I covered it on the episode years ago where I wish it was more like video games where they'd say, we're working on this camera. Like they'd announce, say, for example, the A7 Mark V. They wouldn't give a release date yet. This is basically what it's going to be. It's going to be X amount of megapixels. This, you know, next gen autofocus, that's it. Then maybe 3 to 6 months later, give us a little bit more details on it and actually build up the excitement and keep doing that kind of stuff. So more like development announcements, because that's how it works with video games. You get a trailer for the game when it first comes announced, and then you get more and more info the closer it gets to the release date. That's what I love for camera gear. And I reckon that would be better than just releasing it straight out, because you get more time, more anticipation. And also, it's sort of like a roadmap in a way, but you can stop users from switching. Say I'm really sick of the poor autofocus on my, it doesn't have poor autofocus, but hypothetically, I'm sick of the autofocus, I want to upgrade on my A7 Mark IV. Looking into Canon, looking into Nikon, see which one I'm going to swap to. All of a sudden, develop announcement for the Sony A7 Mark V, new next 4D autofocus to the power of Pi, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, so, okay, I need to stay still. The new one is coming. So I know one's coming. It's going to have better autofocus. I can stick out. So it could help you in that. So I don't think Nikon's just in the wrong to stop releasing lens roadmaps. It would be nice to know what's coming. But as long as they do development announcements, I personally think those are good and they should continue those. Okay, so next up, Sony execs addresses demand for firmware updates. So many Sony users, myself included, are upset that the lack of app after purchase support for even the company's most expensive cameras. So the A7 R5 came out, A7 C2 came out. They all have bulb timers. My A7 Mark IV is now old. I want a bulb timer. Stuff like new menus, you know, software engineers have said it's not tied to the processor. It's just literally like HTML, you know, it's like coding. You can change the look of these menus. It's same with the bulb timer. If you can do a time lapse and stuff, which it can do, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to do a bulb timer. It's just pretty much telling the camera when to trigger the shutter. So I really want that on my features so I know how people feel. And then people who bought an A1 are still missing out on even very basic features from older cameras, you know, like focus breathing, compensation, that kind of stuff. So they're even more angry and they pay 10K or nearly whatever near that for their body. So they have, you know, AD obviously, but they have their right to be angry. So Fuji has always been quite generous with their firmware updates that add new features and options to existing bodies. Not always in DSLR days, but in recent years, Nikon and Canon have also been giving substantial firmware updates to existing models. As an example, Nikon has pushed out 3 major firmware updates that have significantly updated the performance of the flagship camera, whereas the Sony A1, you know, is still awaiting features found on your lower level bodies, as I mentioned, like the focus breathing that's on the A7 Mark IV. It does appear that Sony is at least listening in an interview with LensVid, which is linked in the article, linked in the show notes, that took place at the recent IBC show in Amsterdam. Sony's head of imaging products and solutions marketing at Sony Europe says that while the company can't respond directly to anything unreleased, Sony is listening. The exact quote was, "We know the need, the will of the market," he says in the video. "I can tell you that the highest instances at Sony know about it. So, you know, it's sort of acknowledging it. And no clue if Sony actually changed this policy. Personally, I'm hoping they do. And my opinion as well, I could honestly see Sony doing paid firmware updates. Another old topic I did, I feel that Sony has really learned from the video game world. Because in video games, you know, in the video game world, third parties are seen as allies to the first party. So, you know, you got Sony and Microsoft who make the PS5 and the Xbox, the first parties. Then you got third party studios like Take-Two, EA, lots of other ones. I can't think of the top of my head. Take-Two technically own Rockstar, but you got Ubisoft, heaps of different ones. Now, they often work with the third parties. Obviously, they give their consoles to the third parties to make, you know, even before their release so they can have games ready at release. They do all different kind of stuff for them. So to me, what I reckon they would do, you know, if you don't play games, you're not sure or familiar with it, they will actually release firmware updates, or not so much firmware updates, but packs. They're called DLC, so downloadable content to expand on the game. So say like with my Assassin's Creed Mirage, I don't think there is any, but you would get the game, you would have its story, you would finish it. And then maybe a few months later, you would get the downloadable content, which would be an add-on, which is extra adding on to the story mode or adding new features, that kind of stuff. Often this is just cut from the final game and then paid, you know, you charge extra to add this on, which is complete stupid stuff. I was going to use other words, but keep it clean. But pretty much, I could see Sony going that route where, say you buy the A1 Mark II, you have it, then there's a big firmware update. They'll still probably do bug fixes for the minor cameras, whereas I reckon for the bigger cameras, bigger updates, they're adding on, you know, new autofocus system, depending on the processor, obviously, but major overhauls, I reckon they'll charge a small fee to get this firmware update. How they would do that, I think that is the issue, and that's why we haven't seen it yet, because currently, you know, if you're updating your firmware, you're just downloading a file. There's nothing stopping one person from buying that and then loading it up onto torrent websites. Obviously, it's very risky to use that kind of stuff from a torrent website. You could brick your camera, but who knows, you know, like what's stopping? I do think they'll end up charging, taking the gaming route, but we'll see how we go, obviously. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. Either way, I want my bulb timer on my A7 Mark IV. Now onto the last story. So the DJI Mini 4 Pro has been announced, and it's what their prominent drone maker calls its ultimate mini camera drone. It has a 48 megapixel Type 1 1/3 inch CMOS image sensor and a new image processing platform. Has dual native ISO like all these sort of smartphone style sensors. It's paired with nearly the 50 megapixel sensor, is a 24 millimeter equivalent f1.7 lens with a 82.1 field of view, 82.1 degree field of view. The sensor itself is unchanged from the DJI Mini 3 Pro. It's a 48 megapixel still image. It has lots of fancy video features. It weighs just under 250 grams, so doesn't require registration in the US. Has improved obstacle avoidance, can fly up for up to 34 minutes, can fly up to 20 kilometers away or 12.4 miles. The DJI Mini 4 Pro is available now in multiple configurations. Pretty much the basic one, I think, costs $759 US. And if you want it with for $959, it includes a more advanced DJI RC2 remote controller instead of the RC N2. And there's a whole bunch of other configurations. I'm going to go through them all. There was one stage where I was actually very, very set on getting a drone. And I was like, the next thing I buy has to be a drone. I can't go get anything else. And I've got multiple lenses since getting another body. To me, drones just have lost their appeal, mainly because there's so many regulations, so many places you can't fly them. If you were someone that jumped on the bandwagon when they first came out, like the big DJI Phantoms, those big ass chunky ones, those ones would have been great to own at the time because you could fly them anywhere, no restrictions. Now there's so many, they're so strict, it's sort of not as fun to use them. I have a friend who has one, he barely uses it because of all the restrictions. And you know, you have to go far out to middle of nowhere kind of thing to really use it, make use of it. They still have their place. I'm sure there's countries that are a lot more relaxed or less strict on it compared to places here like Australia. Either way, I'm sure this is going to be for some people. Who knows, maybe in the future I may get one just for fun, but currently I don't see myself doing it. Otherwise, that's it for this episode. Sorry there wasn't any more juicy main topic. Maybe in the next fortnight or two, I got some ideas for ones, but I had so much news that I wanted to talk about and go a bit more in depth like this, so I thought I'd skip it for this fortnight. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening. Please make sure to subscribe. If you could leave a rating on Apple Podcasts or iTunes or Spotify, whatever, be very greatly appreciated. Otherwise, if you want to read any of these articles that I've discussed in news, all the links are in the show notes. Links to the Photography Enthusiast website is there. Obviously, you can find more episodes in whatever podcasting app you're using. Otherwise, if you want to find me, Photos by DLEE on Twitter, Reddit, and you can find my website, photosbydlee.com. Everything's linked in the show notes, so very easy to find. So once again, thank you very much for listening. Take care, and I'll see you again in a fortnight, hopefully.